And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
This show is dedicated to the citizens of planet Earth of the year 4007. Whoever you are, whatever forms of government you may be living with, if government is what you use, we reach across the millennia to let you know that the citizens of planet Earth in February 2007 formally united to save the planet for you. Following is the basis for our decision. We hope you can hear us, for our intentions are good. Do you copy?
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
This week in Paris, scientists from around the world presented their findings on global warming at a press conference held on behalf of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Today, we cover this historic event and some of the response it has already generated. The significance of the report, entitled Climate Change 2007, The Physical Science Basis, is addressed by Achim Steiner, Executive Director of the UN Environment Program.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 2nd of February 2007 here in Paris will perhaps one day be remembered as the day where the question mark was removed behind the debate about whether climate change had anything to do with human activity on this planet. I want to pay tribute to the 2,000 and a half scientists who, for the last few years and indeed in the previous assessment reports, have provided an answer that politicians and others have posed time and again. Provide us with the scientific evidence. I think the IPCC, with this report, provides the scientific evidence that the world has already been recognizing for a number of years, but that even those who had doubts can no longer now ignore. The word unequivocal was the word that Dr. Solomon used. And I think this is the key message of this report. It is an unequivocal set of pieces of evidence that have been put before the world about how fossil fuel use, agriculture and land use change are fundamentally affecting the systems on our planet. I think it is critical that we look at this report not only as a milestone, but truly as a moment where the focus of attention will shift from whether climate change is linked to human activity, whether the science is sufficient, to what on earth are we going to do about it? It shifts from doubting to having to act, even if the last element of certainty is not yet there. I think anyone who would continue to risk inaction on the basis of the evidence presented here will one day in the history books be considered irresponsible. The interesting and very important message of this report is that it matters whether you are born in Europe or in Africa or in Asia or in Latin America or in North America, because climate change will affect you differently, and our societies are prepared in different ways for these changes. If you are an African child born in 2007, it is not unlikely that by the time you are 50 years old, you may in fact be faced with new diseases, you may be faced with new droughts events in your life, you may even have to leave the areas where you live in, because some projections show that Africa may have 30% of its coastal infrastructure affected by the end of this century as a result of sea level rise. If you are a South Asian child born in 2007, it is within your lifetime that you may be faced with inundation of your lands and therefore being turned into an environmental refugee. These are just a couple of examples of how what the scientific evidence presents to us today fundamentally challenges not only the statement that the science is now unequivocal, but that we are also looking for an unequivocal commitment from policymakers, business leaders, civic society leaders to take climate change as truly the challenge of our century, because the evidence is on the table and we no longer have to debate that part of it. As I said at the beginning, the 2nd of February 2007 here in Paris will one day hopefully be known in the history books as the day where we shifted from debating the weather more towards how we move forward as an international community, as a solidarity-oriented community, that under the United Nations framework for the combating climate change will allow us to act as a global community. We cannot solve this problem in isolation from one another. Thank you.
I've read the summary and listened to the press conference. Consider this a briefing. I'll try to provide the scientific basis for the conclusions, explain briefly the rationale, and play clips from the briefing so that you may hear the voices from this historic globalizing event. When you've listened to the entire show, you will know the science and be able to understand what this is all about. So without further ado, here is the current state of the art on global warming. Global warming has divided us for decades. What is it? Is it even real? Is it just a natural phenomenon that comes and goes like the seasons? Are humans responsible? Is it true about the oceans rising, increasing hurricanes and storms? Will there be droughts and massive famine, as some would have us believe? Is there anything we can do about it? Or is it too late? In the United States, the issue of global warming has been bundled into the political debate with liberals for global warming and the neocons against it, or something like that. Al Gore is being considered for an Oscar for Best Documentary and has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for his movie and book, An Inconvenient Truth. While the Bush administration has kept the issue debatable, contending that there just wasn't enough good science to decide one way or the other, that is until last month when, for the first time, the president not only admitted that global warming was real, but that humans were partially to blame. Well, you'll find in the days ahead that the issue will be considered decided. And from now on, people who do not fully embrace the fact that humans are contaminating the atmosphere with too much CO2 and other greenhouse gases for the Earth's systems to accommodate, people like that will be considered on the fringe, extremists. Because in February 2007, the world's leading scientists, over 2,500 of them, following years of focused research from every corner of the globe, have presented their findings. And we'll be reviewing those conclusions throughout the rest of the show. I think it might be useful to discuss what global warming is. I'm going to start out with a very brief explanation of why adding certain gases to the air leads to global warming. It's really quite simple, and it's explained nicely in the term greenhouse gases. Everyone has at some time or other walked into a room or a greenhouse with lots of glass, and you notice immediately that it's much warmer in there than in a room without lots of windows. It's obvious. The warming radiation from the sun easily passes through the glass, strikes things in the room, which warm up, and then the glass holds a lot of the heat inside. It's the same with greenhouse gases. The sun's radiation penetrates through the atmosphere, heats up the earth and the oceans, and then the gases tend to hold in much of that heat, like a blanket. Through long periods of time, everything on the earth starts warming up, just like you do under a nice warm blanket. And the more greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the more heat is kept warming the earth. It doesn't really take all that many years of increased heat to literally heat up the earth. That's what global warming is. To understand it even better, we all know that on a sunny day, when you're feeling the heat of the sun on your skin, when a cloud passes overhead and puts you into its shadow, immediately your skin cools off. Some things in the atmosphere can lead to global cooling. A serious volcanic eruption which sends ash into the air would create a filter of sorts, keeping much of the sun from reaching the earth and therefore cooling things down. So to summarize, there are really these two competing forces which affect climate change, which can be either getting hotter or colder. These forces have been at work for all time. Unfortunately, as human civilizations most recently have entered the modern age, it's no secret that within the last 100 years or so, we've been radically increasing the amount of stuff we put into the air. Smokestacks, power plants, cars, trucks, airplanes. For a while, only a few nations had reached a stage of development where these powerful energy and transportation devices were numerous. But now, in the 21st century, as the global economy expands exponentially around the world, the amount of gases added each day is likewise exploding. Unfortunately, the most common byproducts of all of this are carbon-based gases, which have the greatest effect in keeping in the heat. So as we look out into the 21st century, the buildup of these greenhouse gases is leading to a warming Earth, otherwise referred to as global warming. One of the greatest challenges of global warming is that it is associated with changing climate patterns. And as we all know, it's hard to predict the weather. And the reason is that there are so many variables that affect whether a storm will be a light rain, or a heavy or even severe rain, or can develop into a tornado or out over the warming oceans, be whipped up into a hurricane, or a lot of hurricanes, or a Katrina, or, as the oceans and land continue to warm up in the 21st century, potentially epical storms. And as the oceans warm, ice around the world melts, glaciers will shrink, frozen tundra may not freeze, oceanic ice may not form, and the massive continental ice could begin to melt faster and faster. As well as the land heats up, food crops, plants of all sorts, forests and fields, and the myriads of insects, birds, mice, deer, rhinos, and zebras, and everything else in the balance of nature can shift. The shifting is complex and unpredictable. Humans will have to adapt to whatever these changes are. In some cases, they may be forced to change as well. Humans do not readily accept change. Some may be forced from their homes. Some may lose their ways of life. Some may lose the water that sustains them as rivers that derive from glaciers dry up, or must suffer historic floods as rains increase from increasing water vapor from the warming oceans and air. And the most difficult fact, perhaps, to accept is that many of these dynamics and changes in weather are already beginning to develop. And when it comes to changes in the Earth's dynamics of winds, seasons, rains, ocean currents, once they start to develop a new pattern, these Earth energies have a mind of their own. Many of these systems have been developed over many thousands and thousands of years and have developed their own equilibrium that we accept, for example, as our seasons. And we've come to rely on them. So too have the birds and all the wild creatures. But these new energetics are definitely being seen in new and unpredictable dynamics which have never been seen before on this Earth. And the Earth's future weather patterns, rains, winds, storms, tornadoes, and hurricanes, are all being redistributed to new places. And we're pretty much helpless to do anything but try to live with the new world ecosphere. That's part of the reason we hear so many terms for these changes. Some refer to global warming, and that's because global warming is happening. Some refer to climate change, because climates are changing. Perhaps some new terms need to be introduced as well, such as weather shifting, because all of this will be felt in changing weather. In some areas, heat and drought. In other places, extremes and cold. In other places, tornadoes that seem out of place. In some places, early springs. In others, well, we see these unusual events all the time these days. And part of the strange story of global warming, or climate change, or shifting weather, or global weirding, as I like to refer to it, is that we are just now beginning to feel the effects of a globalizing, interconnected dream of a global economy based on people making and buying and selling billions and trillions of gadgets and things, cars and SUVs, large-screen TVs, refrigerators, flying everywhere, talking around the world, fighting over the resources, deploying armies and spy planes, satellites and stealth bombers, as we arm to fight the global war on terror, as we face the uncertainty of the shifting seas of change. When we return, we're off to Paris, where we hear the presentation of the science on which we must rely to chart the adventures of this 21st century, when your voice of the Earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
The river's on the rise, swift and gentle like the breeze. It swallows everything but sky. It suffocates the trees. Here comes the water. struggle or give in? And does it even matter if I sink?
If I sink?
If I sink or swim?
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. And record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
So what are the findings of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change? We run through and summarize the observables as we continue our coverage of the launching of the event that will unite us all, whether we like it or not, when your voice of the Earth continues here on the Wildside News. In this segment, we'll be hearing from one of the leading experts on climate change, Dr. Susan Solomon, who summarizes the science behind the findings. If you pay close attention, you'll understand the basis for the historic changes, not only in the nature and scope of climate change, but also the science that foretells our future. We begin with Dr. Da-Hae Kim, the co-chair of the IPCC, who provides a brief background on the study.
Just quickly to mention the size of this effort. There have been approximately 600 authors from about 40 countries who have worked on this report. There have been about 600 reviewers. And the whole thing was discussed in the past few days by approximately 300 delegates from 113 countries. And this is the strength of the IPCC process. It's essentially the scientists, the experts, who are the ones who assess and provide the knowledge, but this is something that's discussed and debated by governments, and since we accept everything by consensus, the implication is that whatever is finally accepted and approved has the stamp of acceptance of all the governments of the world. And that, may I say, ladies and gentlemen, really provides the credibility of this massive scientific undertaking, and I may say that this is really a unique example of science in the service of society.
We next turn our attention to Dr. Susan Solomon, who will provide the findings. First, Dr. Solomon summarizes and talks about the human and natural drivers of climate change.
The global concentrations of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, all greenhouse gases, have increased markedly since 1750, and they are now far, far above the values seen in ice cores many, many thousands of years. The increases in carbon dioxide are primarily due to fossil fuel use and land use, while those of methane and nitrous oxide are due to agriculture. This remarkable record of ice core data going back 10,000 years, you can see some minor ups and downs in some of that data. You can see the tremendous richness, the variety of data sets, and you can see this remarkable rapid rise that began with the industrial era. So for all those gases, when we look at this dramatic rise that is so different from the behavior in thousands of years, there can be no question that the increases in these gases, these greenhouse gases, are dominated by human activity. It's well known that atmospheric aerosols can cool the climate. They can offset, to some extent, the effects of greenhouse gases. And with that information, we can now be very high confidence that the net effect of human activity since 1750 has been one of warming, and we can put numbers on that in terms of how it's affected the energy balance of the Earth. So these gases are not being canceled out by the aerosol effect by any means. They are definitely warming, a warming influence on the planet.
Dr. Solomon next summarizes the direct observations of recent climate changes.
The key conclusion is that warming of the climate system is now unequivocal, and that's evident in observations of air and ocean temperature, melting of snow and ice, rising global mean sea level. We have some very exciting developments in this report, I think, in terms of continental, regional, and ocean basin scale changes in climate, too. And that includes changes in Arctic temperatures and Arctic sea ice extent, changes in precipitation amounts, ocean salinity, wind patterns, and some aspects of extreme weather, including droughts, heavy precipitation, heat waves, and the intensity of tropical cyclones. All of those things have been changing in recent decades, at least, and some of them even farther back than that.
Dr. Solomon looks back into historical records to develop and explain the paleoclimatic perspective.
Paleoclimatic information has advanced, too. We have a lot more information from tree rings and from other climatic indicators on paleo timescales. And all of that supports the interpretation that the warmth of the last half century is unusual in at least the last 1,300 years. Another very interesting result from paleoclimatic work is that the last time our polar regions of the Earth were significantly warmer than they are today over an extended period of, say, thousands of years, and that occurred 125,000 years ago due to changes in the Earth's orbit, at that very different time in the Earth's history, we did see reductions in the polar ice sheets that led to 4 to 6 meters of sea level rise. And I hasten to add, not just the ice sheets, but some Arctic ice fields as well.
Next, Dr. Solomon discusses how scientists tried to understand climate change and what she refers to as its attributes.
Moving on to the attribution, what I've been talking about so far are the agents that are affecting the Earth's energy balance. I've also talked about how we observe things to be changing, but that doesn't allow us to go that next very important step of being quantitative about the degree to which we could attribute the changes directly to human activity. And the conclusion is that it's very likely that most of the observed increase in globally average temperatures since the mid-20th century is due to the observed increase in greenhouse gas concentrations. Now we can say very likely, it's a 90% probability. We also have evidence from attribution studies that discernible human influences extend to other aspects of climate, including ocean warming, continental average temperatures, temperature extremes, and wind patterns. This just shows you the changes that have occurred over the 20th century, over each continent of the world except Antarctica, over all of the other inhabited continents. You can see that the warming has been able to be attributed to human activity.
And now what we're all waiting for, Dr. Solomon summarizes some of the projections of future changes in the world's climate systems.
In the next two decades, using previously assessed IPCC SRES scenarios, we would expect, based on projections, that a warming of about 0.2 degrees Celsius per decade would be expected. Even if the concentrations of all the greenhouse gases and aerosols had been kept constant at year 2000 levels, we would have expected to see about a tenth of a degree of warming per decade. And basically what that's referring to is the fact that there's a time lag that there is a, if you will, a memory or an overshoot. Another way people have talked about it is an unrealized warming or even a committed warming. So based on the greenhouse gases and aerosols that are already in the atmosphere, if those were to be kept constant, you would still see a warming of a tenth of a degree. If they were instead to follow any of these emission scenarios that have been considered in the model, you would see 0.2 degrees C. So that tells you something about the degree to which we're already committed to further changes. If we were to keep emitting greenhouse gases at or above the current rates, that would cause further warming and induce many changes in the global system, the global climate system, that would very likely be larger in the 21st century than they were in the 20th century. So the expectation would be if we keep emitting greenhouse gases at current rates, we'll see bigger changes in the coming, in this current century than we did in the last century. So what really is quite exciting to us in this report is that because of the very extensive database of model results that's now available from a much larger set of models than what we had available in the last report, we can actually give best estimates for how much the temperature would warm. And that allows us to really get a sense of how warming will depend on choices that human beings make to emit more or less greenhouse gases in the coming century. Here we have the projections of future changes in precipitation patterns. What we would expect the pattern to be is one of drying in subtropical regions and more precipitation in higher latitudes. So a very, very sensitive pattern to where one lives in terms of what the projections of future precipitation changes might look like. Anthropogenic warming and sea level rise would be expected to continue for centuries due to the timescales associated with climate processes and their feedbacks, even if greenhouse gas concentrations were to be stabilized. If temperatures were to exceed some value, somewhere between 1.9 and 4.6 degrees Celsius, warmer than pre-industrial conditions, and if they were to be sustained for millennia, thousands of years, eventually one would expect the Greenland ice sheet to melt. That would raise sea level by 7 meters. That's comparable to what we can infer happened 125,000 years ago when polar temperatures were similar. And with that, I'd like to conclude. Thank you very much for your attention.
This report quickly generated responses from around the world. In just a minute, we're off to Washington, D.C. to hear the response by the Bush administration to this historic global effort.
Now there ain't no more higher ground. As far as I can see, my heart begins to pound. You know it's getting tough to breathe. Here comes the water. Should I struggle or give in? Does it even matter if I sink? If I sink? If I sink or swim? Your love is like the ocean. It's beautiful and dangerous.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Sometimes it seems that we have our own reality here in the United States of America. And in fact, we do. We are a privileged people. But lately, the spirit of a true democracy has been strained as we learn more and more about the obfuscations and fog of fact that seems to filter the perceptions and decisions of the Bush administration. These judgments are now crossing party lines. In a moment, we hear the Bush administration's response to the IPCC report when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News. We continue our exploration of the report coming from Paris this last week on the future of climates around the world. It's no secret that the issue of global warming has been swirling around the Bush administration like a dust ball at their feet, which one simply cannot kick under the bed. For years, we have heard that the issue is still up for debate because scientists don't really agree on whether global warming is, in fact, real, and that there isn't real science to justify any commitment to Kyoto and other efforts because the science just isn't good enough. There has been a simmering cynicism spun out towards the public at large who embrace and champion the need to respond to global warming. And facts are coming out from within the government's scientific community that there was great pressure and constraints applied to any reports with language that even hinted at or acknowledged that global warming was to be taken seriously. Now, we're about to hear excerpts from a news conference held on behalf of the Bush administration response to the IPCC report. We'll be hearing from Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman, Vice Admiral Conrad C. Lautenbacher, who is the administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as NOAA, and EPA Chief Steve Johnson. And then we conclude with a call to the people of the Earth by Achim Steiner, Executive Director of the UN Environment Program. With that introduction, we now turn our attention to the Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman's response immediately following the press conference in Paris.
The real purpose of the gathering here is to take note of the publication of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. We're very pleased with it. We're embracing it. We agree with it. The science behind it is something that our country has played a very important role in. As the President has said, and this report makes clear, human activity is contributing to changes in our Earth's climate, and that issue is no longer up to debate. The United States has been a leader in climate science since 2001. This administration has been investing roughly $2 billion a year in just the science part of this, the global climate science program, climate change science program, in order to really get a better understanding of just what is causing these changes. This is a very difficult problem because of the natural variability of climate that exists, and trying to get a sense of what the underlying processes are that may be changing things, and apparently are changing things. This administration has consistently supported the view that both the challenge and the possible solution to climate change must be based on sound science. So at the same time that we're seeking better answers to the scientific questions, the President also committed significant resources to developing new technologies to reduce emissions of greenhouse gases and other pollutants. I have seen the extraordinary commitment of our government scientists and engineers and policymakers to confronting this challenge, to learn as much about it as we can, and to develop science-based solutions to tackle it.
We next hear from the administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Vice Admiral Conrad C. Lautenbacher, Jr.
I also want to, emphasize our commitment to sound science, our commitment to take into account these reports and use them for the benefit of the nation.
And finally, a strong statement of commitment from EPA Chief Steve Johnson.
The release of the IPCC report marks a great day for the scientific body of knowledge on climate change. And I really do want to congratulate my colleagues both here at home as well as abroad for their years of research and assessment and for their deliberative review of this extraordinary report. As a lifelong scientist, I am a true believer in the power of science to improve our lives. And as the head of the premier environmental agency in the world, I'm very proud of the Bush administration's unparalleled efforts to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions. Since 2001, EPA and the entire administration have invested more than $29 billion to not only study climate change science, but to promote energy efficient and carbon dioxide reducing technologies and fund tax incentives. Over the past 5 years, as science has evolved, this administration has moved forward, developing the technological solutions today which will drive our environmental successes tomorrow. Through common sense programs like Energy Star, President Bush, EPA, and the Department of Energy are reducing our nation's carbon footprint by offering consumers and businesses environmentally friendly energy choices. In 2005 alone, Americans with the help of purchasing Energy Star products saved $12 billion on their bills and prevented greenhouse gas emissions equivalent to 23 million automobiles. The Bush administration's aggressive yet practical strategy to reduce greenhouse gas emissions is delivering real results. Again, I'd like to congratulate my colleagues and look forward to using their scientific findings as we continue our nation's efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Through our commitment to sound science and innovation, the Bush administration has built a solid foundation to address the environmental challenges of the 21st century.
I leave it up to you to form your own conclusions. But the world is responding in its own way, and we conclude with a call to action with one of the leading change agents in the new global climate era, as we return where we began, to the Executive Director of the UN Environment Program, Dr. Achim Steiner.
Science should not disempower individuals who do not understand the science from acting, and I think it is important that as we present this science, the public does not feel like it can now only sit back and say, well, it's happening and there's nothing we can do about it. I think the science is for experts and policymakers and institutions to address the big picture. The important message, I think, of this report here also is that scientists, to the best of their ability, have now addressed a question that is not primarily a matter of uncertainty anymore, but of ever greater certainty. And I think the message that I particularly, from the perspective of the United Nations Environment Programme, would like to send out is that every individual can today walk out of their front door and cut their emissions by more than what Kyoto had ever envisaged or by what we are talking about for this century without having to lose the quality of their lives. There are consumer decisions that allow us to respond to this science today that we did not even have 15 or 20 years ago. And therefore, the individual citizen should not feel disempowered by the complexity of the science, because that is not its intent.
Those are the facts. It's up to us. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again, or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth unites the people of the earth in one voice, here on the Wild Side News.